Our final case this morning is 2020-1521, Cleveland Metro Bar versus John Alex Morton. Respondent, Mr. Morton. You'll have to unmute yourself, Mr. Morton.
May it please the court. I would like to reserve whatever time I have left over of my 15 minutes after I make my initial points. I think that my defense to this case has always been that the remarks, the statements I made were true. And secondly, I think I have the right to speak the truth. And thirdly, I don't believe that the relator in this case, the Bar Association, had standing to bring this case since they were not the injured party. And what this case really presents is an attempt to coerce the private bar in this state to not speaking the truth. And those are the main points I want to make at oral argument. My brief, I believe, covers everything. So at this point, I would be interested in hearing, answering any questions that the court might have for me.
Hearing no questions, I guess we'll reserve what you've got left. And Mr. DeSantis.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court, Frank DeSantis for Relator. As indicated in the board findings of fact and conclusions of law and recommendations, this case involves comments that respondent made in a pleading filed with the Supreme Court of Ohio. These comments recklessly impugned the integrity of appellate judges and Supreme Court justices who ruled unfavorably against respondent's client, were degrading to the tribunal, and were prejudicial to the administration of justice. Based on the evidence presented at the hearing before a panel of the Board of Professional Conduct, the hearing panel found by clear and convincing evidence that respondent violated Rules of Professional Conduct 8.2A, 3.5A6, and 8.4D. The board voted to adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and recommendations of the hearing panel, and the sanction recommended by the panel that respondent be suspended from the practice of law for a period of 1 year with the entire suspension stayed on the condition that he commit no further misconduct. In response, respondent raises several points. First, standing. Mr. Morton contends that since, in his view, there was no grievant, the Certified Grievance Committee of the Cleveland Metropolitan Bar Association had no standing to institute an investigation or bring a complaint against him. As Relator has argued on the several occasions that respondent has raised this argument, the Supreme Court rules for the Governor of the Bar 59C1 clearly sets forth that a grievance committee shall review and may investigate any matter filed with it or that comes to its attention. This court confirmed that concept in Disciplinary Council versus Oviatt. No formal grievance is required. Also, with respect to standing, respondent has also asserted that there was no injury caused by his inflammatory statements. Realtor's authority to prosecute grievances, however, is not dependent on an injury requirement. The Ohio disciplinary process exists, to protect the public by deterring lawyer misconduct. If some injury is required, it is supplied by the damage to the public's confidence in the justice system that respondent's misconduct has caused, as indicated in comment one of Rule 8.2, quote, a lawyer's false statements impugning the integrity of judicial officers can unfairly undermine public confidence in the administration of justice, end quote. The board found respondent used unnecessary attacks that could negatively affect the public perception of the courts and the justice system as a whole. Clearly an injury if one is required. With respect to the violations, respondent argues that the statements which form the basis of the findings that he violated the rules of professional conduct were not false, nor made with reckless disregard for the truth. But consider his statements. The court decided Moskowitz's case based on politics, not law. The political goal of the Moskowitz court was to maximize government revenue at the expense of taxpayers and his or her constitutional right. The political agenda of the Moskowitz court was the promotion of the leadership of Justice French on this court. Justices French and Kennedy thereby showed a willingness to favor government at the expense of taxpayers and the Constitution, no matter how unreasonable the government's view of the true value of the subject property. The Moskowitz court could not do so, instead intentionally misstated the holdings of each of the cases it cited. Of the Court of Appeals, Mr. Morton said, only politicians committed to maximizing the revenue of their political cronies could reach such conclusion. The respondent's comments recklessly impugn the integrity of judicial officers. He is affirmatively stating, and it can be reasonably understood to mean, that the justices of the Supreme Court made decisions based on political motivations or personal reasons and not the law. He undertook no investigation to confirm the accuracy of those statements, conducted no interviews, and testified that those statements were based only on his readings of the opinions and inferences made from the facts and the law. There is no reasonably factual basis for those inferences. There is nothing in the Moskowitz opinion of the court that supports any of those inferences. Here again, as in Gardner, there is nothing in the opinion that could lead anyone to conclude improper motivation by the justices in their holding. In Gardner, this court held that a failure to investigate constitutes reckless disregard for the truth. We cite a line of cases in our brief wherein this court reiterates that point. Thus, without more, respondent statements can only be considered, at a minimum, made with reckless disregard for the truth. Respondent argues, and again reiterated today, that he provided evidence at the hearing supporting his position that the court did not follow the law. Assuming for the sake of argument that was even true, that's not the basis of this agreement or the findings against respondent. A lawyer can state without ethical repercussions that a court erred in its findings, that a court misinterpreted the law, that a court got it wrong, or even that a court did not follow the law. If Mr. Morton had stopped there, we would not be here. What a lawyer cannot do without any evidence or even investigation is ascribe an improper or dishonest motivation for the court making its ruling, as respondent did in this case. With respect to
Would he be here if he left names out of his brief? If he just said the dissenters, would he still be here?
I'm sorry, Justice, could you repeat that?
So, understanding your argument, had he just said the dissenters in this opinion held and believe that deference should be given to the BTA, would he still be here?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. A lawyer can argue that a court didn't come to the right conclusion. A lawyer has the, I think, obligation to raise the question about whether a court into the right conclusion.
So the fact that he names majority authors and speaks that they actually got the decision right, is that problematic? Are you saying that they just can say the majority or the dissenters and not use a justice's name?
Well, I don't think there's a problem with using a justice's name or the majority or dissenters. I think what's a problem is ascribing an improper or dishonest motivation to either the court as a whole or individual justices.
So when he says Justices French and Kennedy thereby showed a willingness to favor the government, in other words, our deference to the BTA, he's assigning that that's in favor of the government. Why is that improper?
I think what he says, Justice, is Justices French and Kennedy showed a willingness to favor the government at expense of taxpayers and the Constitution, no matter how unreasonable the government's view of the true value of the subject property. He added pejorative words and meaning to what your decision, what your view was in that case.
So are you reading those words in isolation then? Because if you read the whole brief, he's really talking about whether or not the BTA is entitled to deference. I'm trying to understand where the line is. When you read this brief, he is talking about that the dissenters were wrong. There no deference should be given to the BTA as it relates to the valuation of property. He was purportedly in favor of majority authors like Justice Pfeiffer, Justice Lanzinger, in ascribing to them that they are holding the BTA, who is a branch of government administratively, to the standard of no deference, and he's agreeing with that. So where is the line drawn? How would a lawyer know that at which point in time, as you're writing this brief, that somehow you're stepping into hot water?
Well, I think, Your Honor, in Gardner, the court set a standard for determining whether a statement is made with reckless disregard.
That was a criminal context.
I'm sorry?
Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought in Gardner, what the respondent did was accuse a judge of criminal misconduct.
Well, in addition to other things, that's correct.
And okay, here all he's saying is we're getting our deference standard wrong in favor of government. And because it's in favor of the government, it's against the taxpayer. So where's that line drawn that he should know he's in trouble when Garner was really accusing a member of the judiciary for engaging in criminal misconduct, which is completely different than deference?
I think, Your Honor, the Gardner decision uses a reasonable attorney objective standard. And I don't think any reasonable attorney would view the comments that Mr. Morton made in his filing with the Supreme Court as appropriate or even helpful to his case. I think that a reasonable attorney would not use those comments. And that's the standard that Gardner used in determining whether it was made with reckless disregard for the truth.
Thank you.
Sure. I'm going to skip to the sanction. I could address a couple other points if the court would need. But with respect to the sanction, the board recommended that respondent be suspended from the practice of law for 1 year with the entire suspension stayed on condition. Relator objects to that recommendation and submits that based upon the evidence forming the basis of its complaint and Mr. Morton's subsequent conduct, he should serve a 6-month suspension. In its findings of fact and conclusions of law and recommendations, the board found and acknowledged that the respondent refused to acknowledge the wrongfulness of his conduct, was indignant and confrontational through the course of the hearing, and refused to abide by rulings of the panel, repeatedly directed improper questions to the panel, and he stated that he planned to engage in the same type of conduct in the future. In addition, the board acknowledged that unfounded attacks against the integrity of the judiciary typically require an actual suspension from the practice of law, and that the case law supported relator's position that respondents should serve a 6-month suspension based on this court's precedent in Proctor and Gardner. Despite respondents' conduct and the precedent of this court, the board held that a 6-month suspension was not warranted, but should be more in line with the sanction imposed by Shimko. Rather than reiterate all of the arguments we made in that brief with respect to Shimko, let me make two key points. First, distinguishing Shimko's conduct from Mr. Morton's conduct. Shimko's comments were made about one judge in a common pleas court. If members of the public learned of and believed Shimko's comments about that judge, it might not translate to a lack of confidence in the entire judicial process. Mr. Morton impugned the integrity of the Supreme Court of Ohio, the highest court in the state, If members of the public learned of and believed Mr. Morton's comments, that might well lead to a lack of confidence in the integrity of the Ohio judicial system.
How would anyone learn of this? This is just, how would anyone really learn of this? There are hundreds of jurisdictionals filed in our courts all the time, thousands and thousands of documents filed in courts around the state. How would anybody know of this other than our own publication of it here?
Well, Your Honor, I was just going to make the point that it is accessible on the Supreme Court website right now with a description of the comments that Mr. Morton made with respect to the arguments that are before the court now. There are media who pay attention to Supreme Court decisions. There are media people who read briefs that are filed with the Supreme Court. There are lawyers who talk about what happens in the courts and what arguments are made to the court. There were several lawyers involved in the Moskowitz case, and those lawyers could well have talked to other people, including their clients, and their clients were involved in the Moskowitz case. The Moskowitz clients probably read those briefs. And a ripple effect.
That being true, you're still talking about a very small universe. I mean, I don't read newspapers, all the newspapers across the state. I don't remember this being a big issue. Clearly, I think judges are attacked during election cycles for being politically biased or in favor of one side of the other. As you stand witness to what happens in 19 or 2020, nobody talked about this case. So where is the big broadcast of this?
Your Honor, I don't believe as lawyers, we want to allow fellow lawyers to impugn the integrity of our justice system because nobody will find out about it. I don't think that should be the standard. I think the standard should be that a lawyer should be professional, should honor the courts that they serve in front of and not impugn their dignity. And I think that was the purpose for the rule that was established by the Supreme Court. And I think that Mr. Morton almost certainly in everything he said violated that rule. And those rules, I'm sorry. I'm out of time. I had one more conclusion point to make on the sanction with court's permission.
Proceed.
The second point I wanted to make is the board recommended that Mr. Morton be suspended from the practice of law for 1 year with a suspension stayed in the entirety on the condition that respondent refrain from further misconduct. Despite this admonition, the very first words for Mr. Morton in his brief to this court that followed that report in this case is, quote, "This attorney discipline case is about law cases being decided on the basis of politics and not the law." Further, in his brief, he goes on to allege that the board's findings of fact and conclusions of law were also based on politics and not the law. Mr. Morton clearly has no remorse for his conduct. He is all in, and this court should be as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeSantis. Mr. Morton? We'll have to unmute Mr. Morton.
I want to reiterate again, all my statements are true. And
let me ask you about that, Mr. Morton, because you know it's interesting. I couldn't help but observe your body language when opposing counsel was speaking. You didn't seem to be listening and you were smirking. And so is it your position that every time you receive an adverse ruling from any court, it's not the result of, a difference of opinion on a matter of law? It's really just because the whole system's corrupt and this is what you have to face every day. Is that your position?
Well, first of all, you said I was smirking. I wasn't smirking, so I don't know why you.
Okay, let's just get to the substance of my question. What, that your position, that the whole, anytime you receive an adverse ruling from a court, it's not because maybe the court interpreted the law differently than you did. It's because of, just the, improper influences in the court and politics and result-oriented analysis, and it's just corruption. Is that that's your opinion?
You know, Justice Donnelly, I've made it very clear in my briefs all throughout this case that this court did not follow the law in Moskowitz. That is my issue. It has.
But you did more than that. There's nothing wrong with saying that you came to the improper. This court didn't follow the law correctly. That would have been fine. You wouldn't be here today. But you suggested that it wasn't just incorrect analysis. You ascribe as a lawyer in a filing that it was the result of improper influences. Right.
I said that it was a political decision designed to maximize revenue to the government. Yes, that's correct. That hasn't changed. It's not a matter of me losing a case. It's a matter of this court not following the law. I can go into great detail about how the court didn't follow the law in Moskowitz. I don't think anyone here is asking questions about that. But for example,
counsel, what's the improper influence? You are not saying that we have a intellectual difference here. You're saying that there is improper influence on the justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio who decided Moskowitz. What's the improper influence?
The improper influence is a political one of maximizing revenue to the government.
All right. Stop right there. How do you know that?
Because the decision in Moskowitz was so far from the law that it's not based on the law. The natural implication of it is that the tax revenue was enhanced. There's a constitutional provision in this state.
Counsel, you couldn't make an intelligent legal argument. You had to resort to ascribing improper influences to the justices. Is that what I'm to understand here? That your inability to issue a convincing intellectual, legally based argument was beyond your capacity, and therefore impugning the integrity of the members of this court was your only resource or recourse.
No, I've made a very coherent and accurate argument regarding the law, Justice O'Connor. For example, the decision which you signed on to said that the Moskowitz's burden shifting theory is refuted by the case law. It's not Moskowitz's burden shifting theory. It's a theory that was over 100 years old, first brought out by Thayer, professor at the Harvard Law School. So you've changed the entire law and the burden of proof in this case, all right? And it has to do with real property tax cases. Real property taxation in Ohio is limited by our Constitution, Article 12, Section 2. So yes, that's precisely what I'm saying, is this was done for political purposes. Many of you are political figures, yourself, your Chief Justice. The reason you came to Ohio-wide attention was because Governor Taft named you as the Lieutenant Governor, and that spread your name over to the state of Ohio, and then you were able to run for Chief Justice or Justice of the Supreme Court. That's why your name is out there. It's because a politician with a very powerful name in Ohio, Taft, appointed you. Justice DeWine sits on this court. Justice DeWine is the son of the current governor, who's been a career politician. Everyone is living off the taxpayers' dime, salaries, pensions, benefits. So yes, that's precisely what I'm saying here. If the decision had been based on the law, we wouldn't be here.
So Mr. Morton, the way we are employed, the way we earn a living, the confidence that the voters in Ohio have placed on this panel of judges is only there because of a political consideration, in other words, names, and not confidence in our abilities as jurists.
I think that basically we've got a name game here in Ohio. I don't think the average voter has any idea of your judicial philosophy. So yes, that's true. And that's very
Mr.
true.
Mr. Morton,
yeah.
Do you remember the oath you took when you were sworn in as an attorney? Do you remember what that is?
I may have forgotten it, but I mean,
well, part of it is to show respect to judges, right?
Judge Justice Donnelly, you took an oath when you were sworn in as a justice to follow the law,
okay? Right?
The law was not followed in Moskowitz at the expense of the taxpayer. We have a constitutional provision of free speech in the state of Ohio. By encouraging this prosecution, you are not following that law. You also took an oath to follow the law, and I would urge you to follow the law. But
right. Attorneys very often tell me that they don't think in my decision making that I did follow the law. If they disagree, and that's an attorney, as your opponent pointed out, has an obligation to point out when that takes place, and I have no problem with that. But you know, I show respect to attorneys, and I expect attorneys to show respect to the court and the process. And there's reasons for that. It's not just because we think it's a good thing to do, because as a profession, we want the public to have confidence that the court is independent and it's free of all these things that you are suggesting motivate our decision making, which is just absolutely incorrect, and which you have not provided any evidence to support.
I think I provided the evidence, Justice. You just apparently don't want to hear it. We have a constitutional provision in this state, Article 12, Section 2, that limits property taxation. No one has mentioned it. No one has dealt with it. So you are ignoring the law, and that's a violation of your oath.
Counsel, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
There's a couple statements in the report, one about, quote, the most obvious evidence of the political nature of the Moskowitz decision was the decision to delay the decision until Justices Pfeiffer and Lanziger retired from the court and were replaced by Justices Fisher and DeWine, close quote. And the other is, quote, responsibility for the delay must be assigned to Chief Justice O'Connor since it would not have been tolerated without her approval, close quote. What evidence, factual evidence, do you have about the delay?
First of all, there was the delay itself. Why was the decision delayed until Justices Pfeiffer and Lanziger went off the case? There was over a one-year delay in the decision of this case. Okay.
Now that's a question you're asking. Why? I'm asking for your evidence.
And my evidence, the reason I drew that inference is that Justices Pfeiffer and Lanziger favored my approach in the Schwartz and Ross cases, which I won at the Ohio Supreme Court. And so by waiting until they were gone, the two new justices came in, yourself and Justice DeWine. Personally, I think you were blindsided by this, that you didn't know the history of it. The history of this is there was a dispute between Justices Pfeiffer and Justice French regarding deferring to the Board of Tax Appeals or not. It came to a head in the Akron City Schools case, and I would urge you to review those cases, take another look at them, because the law here in Ohio is not being followed. People are being overly
counsel. We know that you don't agree with the law. Let's just put that aside. We're asking, or Justice Fisher and I'm interested in your basis for making these decisions, making these accusations. What was the time between the filing, the briefing, the scheduling, and the other considerations that this court makes when we schedule matters for hearing.
Are you suggesting, Chief Justice, that there wasn't a delay?
I'm asking you. You tell me.
The oral argument on that case was in December. The written decision did not come out for over a year and 3 to 4 months later in May. That was an unnatural delay, okay? It's all in my brief. The other cases that were heard at a similar time were decided earlier. And why did
Counsel, are you saying that Justice Pfeiffer and Justice Lanziger heard this case?
No, they obviously didn't hear this case. In other words, the decision was delayed. The decision was delayed until they left the court. I wish they had heard the case. And the reason I attribute the delay to you is, as the Chief Justice, I believe you have a lot to say about scheduling. Okay.
So, Mr. Morton, apparently I'm clairvoyant, but you know, I've never been accused of that before, but so I'm clairvoyant, and I would delay this because I knew that Justice DeWine and Justice Fisher would be elected. I would then prefer their perspective on something like this rather than my former colleagues, Justice Lanziger and Justice Pfeiffer. That's how I operate. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that Justice French's view that you defer to the Board of Tax Appeals, even on questions of law, which is clearly wrong, you were brought over, you came over to that point of view. You couldn't have done any worse than having Justices Pfeiffer and Lanziger on the court, because you knew what their position was. Their position was that you don't defer to the Board of Tax Appeals on questions of law. So therefore, when Justices Fisher and DeWine came in, you couldn't have done any worse, okay? And also, as new justices, I think that they would be more under your sway and the sway of the senior justices on the court. And then also, Justice O'Connor. Justice O'Connor, if what I've done was so terrible, why didn't you file a grievance?
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Morton?
Why didn't you file the grievance?
All right. We will take the matter under advisement, gentlemen. Thank you. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.